She's gonna be okay.
Great. I know you're relieved.
Thank you, Robin. This one meant a lot.
I'm just glad you were able to keep your promise to her.
Me too. If I can't honor my commitments, well, it's not the man I want to be.
Marcus, you know, no matter how this would have turned out, you're not your father. You understand?
I hope so.
You are a decent human being. You honor your word. You're a man I would trust with my life.
Thank you for always being there for me, showing up when it counts. About those drinks.
It's okay. Don't worry about it. Clear your head. You got a lot to process. I'm not going anywhere.
In this hour, this final hour of today's program, The Equalizer's Tori Kittles joins us to talk about playing Frederick Douglass, Paul Robeson, and if that ain't enough, Queen Latifah's love interest. I am pleased to welcome Tori Kittles to this program. Tori, how are you today, sir?
Doing great. Thank you for having me, Tavis.
No, it's good to have you on, man. Let me start with the latter, playing Queen Latifah's love interest. It seems to me, and I'm going to confess this on the radio here across country, I wasn't sure how this Equalizer thing was going to work out as a TV series this time around, given that we've seen so many different iterations of it, and Denzel has put his own flavor on it, of course, in movie theaters with a number of different sequels. So I wasn't sure how this was going to work out, but it seems that the network has found a hit here. They found a way to make this work. Your thoughts?
You know, it began first as a television series that was then turned into a movie.
Exactly.
Back in the 80s, it was Edward Woodward who played the character initially. Mm-hmm. And then obviously you have, you know, the great Denzel Washington step into those shoes and make it his own and make these wonderful movies, him and Antoine Fuqua, that have sort of transcended what was originally there. But, you know, what initially sort of attracted me to the project was Queen Latifah. Mm-hmm. Anything that, you know, she steps into is going to be great. So when I first got the script, I didn't even read it. I just, you know, I thought, oh, well, it's Queen. She's doing it. I'm in. Because we had worked together two times before on Bessie and then on another project called Steel Magnolias, which mm-hmm. Kenny Leon directed. Mm-hmm. And so it was her being involved that I thought this is going to be entirely different. This is going to be entirely new. Also, a woman stepping into those shoes mm-hmm. Who has a family. And, you know, we dive into her personal life and everything that she's managing and still equalizing. So that was interesting to me. And I thought that it could possibly be something special. Now, the fact that it's turned into a show that is number one, specifically with African Americans, but also a top 10 primetime drama. And we're in 150 countries around the world, 10 million views each episode. You know, that's something that hats off to the writers, hats off to the production team. And to be a part of something like that is incredible.
Let me come back to this point you made a moment ago, Tori, about the way that the frame has been flipped here, if you will. So you go from a character that's played by a white male to a character that's played by a woman and a black woman at that. So if that ain't flipping the frame, I don't know what is. And yet it works. What then does it say about how one can flip the frame in Hollywood? And what does it say about the fact that not just how it can be done, but that it, in fact, can be done and be successful?
Well, I think it begins first with the initial idea and the writing. Mm-hmm. Everything great comes from that. Like, great writing is timeless. And so it will play in any generation, you know, like at first it was the 80s and then Denzel was, you know, mid 2000s. And now here we are in 2024. But it speaks to what was initially on the page. And I think with our show, our writers specifically can use Queen Latifah and everything that she brings to any project in a specific way that not only speaks to her audience, but speaks to a broader audience globally.
Yep. Just getting started with Tori Kittle's in this hour. He is one of the co-stars of The Equalizer alongside Queen Latifah. As I mentioned earlier, he plays her love interest. We'll talk more about The Equalizer when we come forward. And we ain't got to Frederick Douglass and Paul Robeson as yet. A great deal to talk about with Tori Kittle's when we come forward on Tavis Smiley.
You're listening to Tavis Smiley.
Tavis Smiley.
Ranked number 45 on the Heavy 100 list of the 100 most important radio talk show hosts in America. Ready to re-examine your assumptions and expand your inventory of ideas? More of Tavis Smiley coming your way right now.
More of Tori Kittle's coming your way right about now. In case you just tuned in, he co-stars alongside Queen Latifah in the hit TV show, The Equalizer. He's also played some other major characters in his career. We'll talk about that, not just the characters he's played in his past, but what he's about to do on Broadway again with our friend and brother Kenny Leon in a project called Home. We will talk about that as well. But let me just another a couple questions if I can, Tori, about Equalizer. We'll move forward here. What does it feel? How does it feel to take something that is in the culture, something that's already well known, something that already that people have already connected to, and put your own sort of funk, your own sort of stamp on it?
You know, what's great about the show is the way people are responding to it, and our audience, they are keen to let you know how they feel. You know, Queen and I both talked about this a lot. We get stopped in the streets and people want to talk about the show, talk about how it makes them feel on Sunday nights. People also are saying, hey, enough is enough. When are you guys going to get to this relationship? So it feels good to be a part of something that's striking a chord culturally. Like, there's a significance in that I don't think we anticipated, but you know, you hope to hit that mark and you hope to honor the things that have come before.
Yeah.
You know, but I think with everything, you have to make it your own. You know what I mean? But it's a collective effort. It's not solely Queen. It's not solely me. It's, you know, it's all of us. It's Joe Wilson, who is our showrunner. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, Lorraine Toussaint, who the show found at a particular time in her wonderfully great career. It's Leah DeLeon Hayes, Adam Goldberg, you know, Lisa Lapira. So it's everybody coming together to work specifically toward making this show the best that we can possibly make it, knowing that it is affecting so many people.
Yep. Let me pull a slice out of the character that you and Latifah play. It is one thing. I mean, the show is what it is. We know what The Equalizer is. We know what she does, and in the film, in the series rather, as The Equalizer. And yet, the part I want to pull out, you referenced a moment ago, and that is the Black love piece. We have seen Black people in all kinds of roles, playing all kinds of characters. To my mind, they being Hollywood, still haven't really allowed us to see the complexity of Black life, the complexity of Black character, and certainly not the complexity of Black love. The fact that that's a part of this storyline, I can't obviously get ahead of the writers, but the fact that that's even a part of this storyline, I think is worthy of conversation. So what say you to me and to the audience about the idea, the opportunity, as it were, to be a part of a Black love story? Period. Hard stop.
Well, you know, I mean, Blackness obviously is not a monolith. You know, we have so many different complexities and so many different facets of our lives that we can explore. And hats off to everybody at Universal Television and CBS for willing to do that at the network level. You know, it starts with Queen, though, who is always pushing the envelope, and then collectively our whole team. But it's great that we get to do it. I think, you know, entertainment at its base should educate, entertain, and inspire. So to be able to see Black love in the way it's presented between us, and not just like, hey, all right, we're going to go after this. It's been teased over the course of the last, you know, four seasons now we're into it. Mm-hmm. And been a slow build and a slow burn. And this season, particularly moving toward the end of this season, there will be some resolution there. You know, it will be sort of the time to put up or shut up where it comes to Robin and Dante. Will they or won't they? The audience has been waiting for that, and they're going to get a slice of that going forward.
I love how smoothly you did that. How smoothly you did that. At the end of this season, there will be. It always helps. I know the studio's happy when you can tease something without giving it away, and you did that quite nicely, Tori Kittles. Quite
I've been
nicely.
listening to you for a long time, Patrick.
No, man, you know how to do it, brother. And you did it quite nicely. Let me. I mentioned Kenny Leon. Actually, you mentioned Kenny Leon first, and I mentioned him second. We both love and adore and respect the one and only Kenny Leon. Tony winning director. I saw his most recent work that I saw was
Early
yeah,
Victorious.
Pearly Victorious. Yeah, I that an amazing, amazing Nate and the whole crew. I mean, just an amazing a piece of work. You get a chance to see it?
I did. I saw it twice.
Yeah.
I went to previews. Was the first time I saw it. Then I saw it. Actually, I saw it a couple times. Then I saw the opening. And then, you know, I'm friendly with Leslie, who I thought
Sure.
was just
Right.
tremendous in that part. Also, Carrie Young, the great Carrie Young, and Vanessa Bell Calloway. Just such an amazing cast across the board. And so I wanted to see it multiple times because I wanted to learn,
Yeah.
not knowing that I was going to be working with Kenny shortly thereafter. Like
Yeah.
I had no idea that Kenny was going to call me up and say, "Hey, I'm working on this thing in the spring. I want you to come do it." You know, so that I just love great theater. And then when you can take something that Ozzie Davis wrote, you know, all those years ago, and him and Ruby Dee did again, and go back to timeless writing. You know, it speaks now the same way it spoke then, and that's when something, you know, something is truly great, and it can move artists to get out of the way and just let it blossom and be whatever it wants to be. And Kenny is the maestro of pulling people together and understanding what great writing is, and getting you to trust him in a way that allows you to move toward getting out of the way of your ego, you know, removing self from this and committing to the collective, the company, and allowing something to flourish in a way that it really wants to flourish without you making it happen. You're just a vessel for it to come through.
To your point about writing, when I saw Leslie, and again the whole cast is amazing, but Leslie is a gem and a jewel. When I saw him bring this character to life, and watch this thing from the audience, it made me, how can I put this? I had a whole new level of respect for the work and for the work, and particularly the writing of Ossie Davis. So much of what he wrote all those years ago still resonates now in Pearly Victorious. What was your takeaway from the actual writing? I mean, I was sitting there in the audience, you know, months ago when I was able to see this, sitting there wishing I could pull out my phone and start typing some of these lines. As it turns out, I said, "Hey, I know the director. I can get a copy of the script.
That's right.
I can get a copy of the script. I don't have to pull my phone out." But the lines, these powerful lines, were coming at you so fast and so furious. It really made me rethink and just value all over again the work of Ozzie Davis. I was honored to interview Ozzie a number of times in his career. Moreover, was honored to be one of the eulogists at his funeral. So I feel some connection to him anyway, obviously. But to sit there and to imbibe those words, it really does make you have respect for what can be put on the written page.
You know, Ozzie Davis was obviously one of the great artists, specifically for his time, but then that transcends time when we look at how his work is still standing and other artists are doing it, you know. But there's a current that runs through great, great pieces, and that current runs through the artists who are giving us those great pieces, you know. And so for Ozzy to collectively take all of his experiences and all the things that he was going through in the 60s and put that down on paper And then for Leslie to put his spin on it, make it his own here in 2024, that's one of those things where it's just art feeding art and feeding the artist. And then again, I think, I can't say enough about Kenny Leon and how he works. This is Kenny, just to give you a little bit of insight to the first time I met Kenny, I was his reader for Fences. They were casting Fences, the one that he did with Denzel and Viola. And he'd come to LA, and I was the guy who would read with all of the other actors coming in to play Corey, the son, and in the great August Wilson play Fences. And while I was reading, Kenny goes, "Hey, you should read for this." Now, secretly, every actor who is a reader, they all want to be asked that question. Yeah, exactly. That's what I want. I want you to ask me to read. And so I did, and I read with Denzel, and I had a great, I think one of the greatest moments in the room that I've ever had. Now, I didn't get it, but Kenny remembered that audition. And then he offered me Steel Magnolias. And then he offered me Guess Who's Coming to Dinner, which I did with Felicia Rashad down at the Rialto Center in Atlanta. And so now, for him to call me up, after so many years have passed, and we've remained, great friends. I consider him a mentor because he's just a plethora of knowledge. And if you just sit and listen to him talk and talk about his experiences, within the Broadway community with the great, late, great August Wilson, and how he, approaches the material and his respect for the material. When he talks about Sam Art Williams and his poetry in the play that we're doing, Home, it's inspiring. So to be around that energy, and to come back, sort of full circle and be able to be in Kenny's circle right now as he's doing so much wonderful work, within the Broadway community and beyond. I don't take it lightly. I consider it a great blessing, and it's a great joy for me to be in this moment, in this particular time, doing this play with him.
Tell me, to the extent you can, tell me what you can tell me about Home, the project you're doing with Kenny that's coming to Broadway soon.
Well, Home is it's a play by the great Sam Art Williams. If you're not too familiar with him, he wrote this play back in the 70s. He was a Negro Ensemble Company play that LaTanya Jackson did with Sam Jackson, her husband. They did it. Lorraine Toussaint, she has told me that she did it in the 90s at Hartford Stage with Delroy Lindo. So you have all of these great artists who this play inspired. And the play is about, it's about family, it's about love, it's about joy, it's about maintaining your core values. Or if you can maintain your core values when life happens and you're forced to leave home. And ask questions like, can you come back home? There's so much great language and poetry within this piece. And it's one of those things where it went to Broadway in 1979, and L. Scott Caldwell and Charles Brown did it. And I think he won the Tony. And it hasn't been done in 40 some odd years. So this is the first revival, Broadway revival of the show. And the play is just a whole lot of exploration about, getting back to what's true for you, wherever you are and wherever you come from. Like, what does home mean to you? And we have an amazing cast, Brittany Ainge from the Miss Pat Show, and Storyteller's. An incredible talent. So it's the three of us. It's a three-person play. And all three of us are going to be up there making sure we honor Sam Art Williams' words and also Kenny's direction.
Yep. Tell me a bit more for those who've not seen Home. Tell us a bit more about your character.
I play a character named Cephas Miles. Cephas Miles is a farmer boy from this town called Crossroads, North Carolina. And he loves what he does. He loves this land that his grandfather and his uncle taught him how to nurture. And he loves this woman. He loves, loves, loves this woman. And she leaves. She goes off to college to find a better life than the small country town. And Cephas is still okay. You know, he loves her, but he's still okay being a farmer. That's what his purpose is in his mind. And then Vietnam happens. The play takes place in the 50s, 60s, 70s. Vietnam's happens. And he's forced to take a stand because of the way he was taught by his grandfather and his uncle. And he doesn't believe in killing. He takes the literal, thou shalt not kill. It's in his heart and printed on his heart. And so he takes a stand that he's not going to go to Vietnam. And we know what happens when you take certain stands. And he's thrown into prison. And when he's thrown into prison, he loses everything. And he gets out, and there's no place for him to return. Essentially, his birthright, his land, is taken from him. So he has to find another way to live. And he ventures off to a big city, you know, the promised land, looking for the promise that big cities seem to offer. And he sort of loses himself, and he loses his core values. And the play really is about being inside of the journey and understanding that things don't necessarily happen when you want them to happen,
Oh, yeah.
but they happen in the right time. And you gotta appreciate the journey. And Cephas Miles does that with a lot of joy and a lot of humor and a lot of love.
I should mention that for those of you Broadway fans, and that I'm sure it means many of you, Home previews May 17, as I recall. May 17, it previews, opens June the 5th. The Broadway show, the revival of Home, again, previews May 17, opens June 5, with a great cast, including Tori Kittles, who's our guest in this hour on Tavis Smiley.
Seeking the truth, speaking the truth, this is the Tavis Smiley Show. Who do you trust to get at the truth? Tavis Smiley. That's who. The conversation continues right now.
It does indeed with actor Tori Kittles. In case you've just tuned in, you've missed a fascinating part of our dialogue already, talking about his co-starring with Queen Latifah on the hit CBS show The Equalizer, where he plays her love interest and beyond. We've been talking of late about his Broadway work. He's been on Broadway before with Kenny Leon. He's going back to Broadway with Kenny Leon in a play called Home. Which premieres here in just a few weeks and opens in June. We've been talking about that. What I have not gotten to as yet is Frederick Douglass and Paul Robeson. So let me push, watching my time, let me push toward those particular issues that I want to cover as well. It's a pretty amazing thing in any career to be able to play Frederick Douglass or Paul Robeson. To do both Tori Kittles is just patently unfair, brother. It's just unfair.
You know, I think sometimes the things find you. You're not necessarily looking for them, and they tend to find you when you know you're open to it and when you're ready for it. You know, Frederick Douglass. I mean, you know, what a life, what an inspiring life, and the things that he fought for and the things that he changed about our way of life. You know, we're here now because of the work that he did. So to be able to be a part of that story was, you know, was one of those special things.
Tell me, take me back to when you did Douglas and when you did Robeson. I'm trying to get a sense of how far apart these things were apart and when they happened in your career.
Wow. Frederick Douglass, you know, see, now you got me going back in time, Tavis. I can't remember exactly the year, but I was when the call came from for Frederick Douglass. You know what? It was a great casting director, Kim, and who called me up and said, "Hey, we're doing Harriet. And Deborah Martin Chase, who's one of the producers on The
Sure.
Equalizer, was also one of the producers on that movie. So we're doing this. Why don't you, Kim Harden said, why don't you come in and read for it? So I had to go in and I read for the part. It was, and I was like, just to be a part of something like that was great. And so I started reading all of everything that he wrote. I started reading everything that people wrote about him. And I just sort of wanted to honor his life. I think anytime you're playing an actual real historical character, you just want to make it as real as possible. And this was he came up in a time where there was no radio interviews or video interviews. And so you just try to get the essence of who he was based on those things, what he said about himself and what other people said about him. And so I just tried to, just live in that space, when I played that part. And it wasn't until a few years after that that Paul Robeson
Robeson, yeah.
came. But this is how I guess creative energy works in a sense. I got a call from Richard Eyre, who'd run the National Theatre in London for years. He did Hamlet with Daniel Day-Lewis. He did King Lear with Anthony Hopkins. And he called me up out of the blue and said, "Hey, I'm working on this play and it's about Paul Robeson and I want you to come do it." Now, Richard had seen Bessie that I did with Queen Latifah. And he was a big Bessie Smith fan. And just based on that movie, he wanted to offer me this part. Now, I knew who Richard Eyre was, obviously in the work that he'd done and the great actors and artists that he worked with. So it was a no-brainer for me to just say yes. And so I went over to London and we started to work this play. And I'd heard about Paul Robeson. My father was a fan of Paul Robeson growing up, but I didn't know a lot about his life. So much of his life had been lost, and so much of it really was erased. A lot of times our great historical figures, we don't talk about them, we don't pass those things on. And I felt like, Paul was one of those guys. I got into his life and I started doing some research and found out that he was the first, Black All-American football player. He also had a law degree. He was going to be a politician. And people wanted him to be a politician, but it was his wife who, understood that he had such a great voice that would be better suited for the stage and he would affect more people and he could change more lives by doing that. And that's exactly what he did. He went on to advocate and support unions, and he was the biggest star, black or white, of his time. He was the biggest. He raised more money for the war effort than anybody, because of his song, The Ballad of Americas. And so I started to do all this research, and our particular play was about his time doing Othello. He was the first black American to play Othello, not the first black to play Othello, but he was the first black American to play Othello on Broadway. And the play was about his relationship with Uta Hagen, who became a great acting teacher, and his relationship with her and Jose Ferrer, who was also married to Uta at the time. And what they did was this play was the longest. Oh, their Othello was the longest running Shakespeare play on Broadway. It was 239 shows. And after the Broadway run, they took it around the country. And this was a time where it wasn't popular for a black man and a white woman to be in any scene, let alone, where the black man kills the woman in Othello. No spoiler alerts if you don't know it. But so they traveled with this play, and the play was called Eight Hotels, and it was about their time traveling, presenting Othello to American audiences in the South. So he would get up and do the show at night, but he didn't have a hotel to go to after the show. And so he'd have to sleep on the floors of Uta Hagen and Jose Ferrer. And so that's what the play was about. But he was just a tremendous figure and did so much for so many people. And a lot of his life is lost, has been lost. I'd hope to see a story or a movie done on his life. I think there have been a
There've been a few fits and starts. I am still waiting on the ultimate Paul Robeson film. There's so much there. There's so much to unpack about his life and his legacy, and the grand nature of his contributions. I've said many times on this program and beyond that there is no Renaissance man quite like Paul Robeson in American history. Not black, not white. There is no Renaissance man quite like Paul Robeson in all of American history. And the fact that you were honored to play him on stage, say nothing of Frederick Douglass, is fascinating to me. When we come forward, I want to just probe this. I don't know that I've ever talked to anybody who's played both Frederick Douglass and Paul Robeson. Maybe I have at some point in my career, but I would think that your constitution, if your DNA doesn't get reconstructed playing those two characters, certainly one's constitution, I would think, has to be a bit different. Once you played Frederick Douglass and once you played Paul Robeson, I would think that something about you must be different. Something about you must change, even if it's just a matter of your confidence growing. But I am curious as to what happens when one gets a chance to play both Frederick Douglass and Paul Robeson on stage, as our guest Tori Kittles has done. We'll talk about that in a bit more. Before we lose him at the top of the hour, you're listening to Tavis Smiley.
Hope, agency, dignity. This is Tavis Smiley.
Can you dig it?
Come on!
Smart talk for curious people just like you.
Just like you.
You're listening to Tavis Smiley.
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 Tavis Smiley and Tori Kittles. Tori, I put the question out there a moment ago. Now I want to hear your response. What is it like in one's career when you've had a chance to play not just Frederick Douglass, but Paul Robeson as well? What does that do to you,
or for you,
for that matter? Yeah, to you or for you? Yeah.
First, I got to correct myself. It was Kim Coleman that cast me in that movie, not Kim Harden. I don't want to disrespect the casting directors. they are they've been so grateful to me, really great to me over the course of my career. And a lot of times they don't get the credit that they deserve. So I don't want to confuse Kim Harden and Kim Coleman. But you know, I think when you approach playing a great, any great figure, you have to look, you have to start with what's underneath all of that. You know, what are the things that made them great? You know, what are their actions? You know, because the actions always speak louder than words. You know, where did they begin? What was their upbringing? Who influenced them? So you take all of those things into account. And once you start doing the research, they start to talk to you. You know, they start to talk to you, even if it's just to go, hey, look over here, uncover that stone. And then, you know, you start one place that leads you to another place, and you start to map out and you get a diagram of the totality of who this person was. And then you just try to encapsulate it. You know, I am who I am. I think I always approach things from the essence of who I am and where I come from, and you know, the life lessons that I've learned and the career path and the my trials and tribulations and all those things. You bring all of that to it, so you can't get away from you. It's still you. You're just allowing this other thing to happen. It is something that's really hard to explain, getting out of the way of yourself. It's really, but that's what the work is really about. You know what I mean? If I've been, anytime I've ever been good, I think it starts with the writing, and then it starts with the director, and then it starts with me getting out of the way of my own ego. Like, I don't ever want to approach something going, oh, well, this could do this. You know what I mean? This could do this for me if I approach it like that, or this could, you know, this could turn into this. Like, no, what are the circumstances that are right here in this moment, and stay in this moment? And that's what I always try to do, whether I'm playing, you know, Detective Dante, or I'm playing, you know, Frederick Douglass or Paul Robeson. But it begins with the research and understanding of who this person was and where they come from, and honoring that.
No, that's great advice, and not just for thespians, but for all of us, to get out of your own way, and to be in the moment. That is stellar advice. Get out of your own way and be in the moment. Our remaining moments with Tori Kittles when we come forward on Tavis Smiley.
What's your quarrel with the world? You're listening to Tavis Smiley. Let's get back to more of Tavis Smiley right now.
More of Tavis Smiley and Tori Kittles, who I've enjoyed talking to in this hour, but just about 3 minutes left here to wrap this conversation. So, Tori, is this what you imagined this career would be when you decide to become a thespian?
I'm not certain whether it's what I imagine because, my career has taken so many different turns, peaks, valleys, and my initial thought wasn't about what it is about now. I'm a small town country boy from a town of 700 people. So my first thought was, hey, I want to be famous. I think that's the first thought, like, 'cause being famous would get you out of this particular situation. As I've traveled and studied and learned more about what it is, what it actually means to be an actor, to be an artist, my approach is entirely different. There is no expectation. There is only what's in front of you right now. So I don't have necessarily like grand ideas anymore. I look at it in a way that I ask myself the question, how can I service this? And I think starting from that place, whatever happens outside, whatever comes because of the work, that's great. And I welcome that. And that's wonderful, but that's icing on the cake. The fact that I get to do what I get to do with so many wonderful people, with Kenny Leon, with Queen Latifah, like to be in this space with these great minds and these great influential people and learn from them and grow, that to me is the ultimate gift.
Well, you are sharing that gift with all the rest of us in the variety of roles that you are starring in. I celebrate that and wish you nothing but the best in the coming months and years. Of course, Tori Kittles stars alongside Queen Latifah in the hit CBS drama, The Equalizer. You can catch him on Broadway once again in Home, being directed by our friend and brother, Tony winner Kenny Leon. Home again premieres on Broadway at the Roundabout. The previews, I think, are May 17th. It opens on June the 5th, and we wish Kenny and Tori and the entire cast nothing but all the best. If you can do on stage what you've done on the small screen with Equalizer, you're gonna be all right, brother. So all the best to you, Tori. Thank you for coming on the program, my friend. Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much for having me.
My pleasure to have you on this program. Some great guests coming up on Tavis Smiley this week, including some guy named Larry Wilmore. That should be fun and funny. Larry Wilmore on this week. Faye Wilderton, with all the talk about women's rights, their reproductive rights, the first sister to ever run Planned Parenthood back in the day. Faye Wilderton is a guest on this program this week. Some guy named William Shatner. That William Shatner from Star Trek fame, William Shatner, a guest on this program this week. Some other great guests all week long. We look forward to again tomorrow and the next day, and the next day some great conversations in the days ahead. Until then, thanks for tuning in to Tavis Smiley today, and as always, keep the faith.